We have the greatest device ever created.
I love it. We
have supercomputers in our pockets. There is no excuse for someone to say they don't have access to information. Those same people are on Instagram all day. They're on Facebook all day. So to tell me that you don't have access to information, that's a bold-faced lie. We all have access to information. It comes down to how much time are you willing to put into developing yourself, developing your business. And that's what we all need to do. And I think sometimes, specifically, let's just say men tend to be more arrogant. Oh, I know it all.
Or they don't want to show that they don't know.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. We'll discuss race and how it plays a factor and how we didn't even talk about this topic because we were afraid.
A Black Executive Perspective.
We are coming to you live from the new BEP studio for another thought. Provoking episode of a Black Executive Perspective podcast, a safe space where we discuss all matters related to race, culture, and those uncomfortable topics people tend to avoid. I'm your host, Tony Tidbit. So we have a fantastic show today. I'm so excited about what we're going to talk about. But before we get into it, I want to make sure for all of you to check out our partners at Code M Magazine, whose mission is to save the Black family by first saving the Black man. So definitely check them out at CodeMMagazine.com. That is CodeMMagazine.com. So today, Anthony Price, entrepreneurial, author and publisher of Connecticut Hoops Magazine, joins a Black Executive Perspective podcast to break down what it takes to build something extraordinary in a world that settles for average. We're going to dive deep into how he launched Connecticut Hoops Magazine, his best-selling book, Get the Loot and Run, and why Black entrepreneurs must be bold, strategic, and mentally tough. So let me tell you a little bit about my good friend, Anthony Price. Anthony Price is the publisher of Connecticut Hoops Magazine, a platform spotlighting the stories, images, and people shaping basketball on and off the court. He's a writer, entrepreneur, and an author of, as the aforementioned book, Get the Loot and Run, a guide for funding your business without relying on banks and credit cards. He pens a weekly column on the WNBA's Connecticut Sun and has published books on icons like Kobe Bryant, Stephen Curry, and Stephen A. Smith. Before launching his company, Price helped small businesses nationwide access billions in capital as an economic development executive and keynote speaker. Anthony Price, my brother, welcome to a Black Executive Perspective podcast.
Tony, thank you, and I love that introduction.
Buddy, it's your introduction. I mean, it's your life. And look, man, you've done a lot of great things. And, you know, I'm so excited that you're here. You know, I was reading a little bit about your book, Get the Loot and Run, you know, about funding a business and getting capitalism. And I love a lot of the things that you put in there. So we're definitely going to dive into that. But before we get started, my friend, you know, tell us a little bit about where you're living and a little bit about your family.
Well, to make a long story really short, I was born in Washington, D.C. I grew up in Worcester, Massachusetts, 45 minutes west of Boston, and now in the greater Hartford area. Have a son who's completing his master's degree in accounting. And that's sort of the quick version. Yeah, I don't want to bore you with all the details.
No, buddy. So number one, you don't look like you have a son that's about to graduate from college, which is great, man. So life, it must be good for you. And let me ask you this, though. You know, as we just walked through, and I think you and I chatted a couple of days ago, and you were at the Connecticut Sun game, you know, reporting on the game, and you've been on a lot of different platforms. You were on the local Channel 8 News talking about what you do. I've seen you out in the social stratosphere doing a lot of stuff on a lot of different platforms. So tell me a little bit why you wanted to, you know, come on a Black Executive Perspective podcast, talk about this topic.
Well, as a publisher of CT Hoops, you know, I love talking about basketball, and it's really about me. I'm at a point in my life where I want to be able to give back and help, you know, share some of the gems that I've learned through hard work and through, you know, making mistakes and so forth. So I want to save people who are really serious about growing their business or being successful in corporate America, maybe some of the mistakes or the challenges that I went through, and maybe help pave the road and make it a little bit easier if you're willing to put the work in, be the best that you possibly can.
It's time to rethink your protein. Agrilabs protein bars are crafted with high-quality protein, double the leucine, and enriched branched-chain amino acids, essential for optimal muscle recovery. Finally, a protein bar that works as hard as you do. So visit agrilabs.com and use the code BEP to get 20% off. That's agrilabs.com, promo code BEP.
Buddy, I'm so glad you said that because it's so true. And I'm glad that you're willing to come on and share, you know, what you've done in terms of your illustrious career. So you ready to talk about it, my friend?
Let's get into it.
All right. So let's talk about it. So let's go into, you know, turning nothing into something, right? Turning water into wine. So what sparked you to start, you know, Connecticut Hoops Magazine?
I've always been entrepreneurial. So that's sort of been a thread that's gone throughout my life, sort of like a river winding and through the country. And so at a certain point, I was involved in basketball. I used to be the former commissioner of the Greater Hartford Program, which is called the Basketball Capital right now. And it's been around for 28 years. So I was the commissioner of that for a few years. And I saw a white space or a void in the market. Mm-hmm. There was no, we're supposedly the basketball capital of the world, according to the University of Connecticut. You know, winning all those championships. 18.
From a college standpoint.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Exactly. Because, you know, you hear the people in the Knicks and the Mecca in New York and L.A., the Forum. But go ahead. I hear you, buddy.
Yeah, so I saw a white space in the market. If we're going to be the basketball capital of the world, we need a magazine that documents all the great things that we're doing. So I saw that opportunity about a year ago, actually not even a year yet. And I said, okay, look, we're going to do it. We're going to come out with a magazine that has phenomenal photography, great in-depth stories, and just mix in some other things that are great to be able to be around, whether it's poetry, whether it's art, whether it's culture, and wrap it all around the game of basketball.
That's awesome, man. So, you know, one of the things you were telling me is that, you know, it really focuses on storytelling in terms of the athletes and not just, you know, the college athletes, but just either inspiring kids that's playing in grade school or high school, or middle school that have a dream of either playing in the WNBA or NBA or whatever the case may be, or just the passion. So talk a little bit. How do you get, you know, people to share their stories? And more importantly, how do you find them, the stories that you want to talk about?
Everyone has a story. So the stories are all around us. It's just that you have to be willing to go and connect with those people because everyone wants to tell their story. Everyone wants to feel important. Everyone is important. And I think those stories are really valuable. I think one of the things that happens in this country is we're so driven by celebrity and we think that celebrities can teach us everything. No, your neighbor next door probably can teach you more than the celebrity on TV or in Hollywood. So that's the way it started. And just being involved with the basketball program, being around basketball, you meet all these different people and stories. So in our first issue, we came out with we did a cover story on Jim Calhoun, arguably probably the greatest basketball coach in New England. He grew up in Braintree, Massachusetts, you know, won a championship. He started at UConn in 1986. Interesting thing about his story is Gino Auriemma was hired a year before him. So just imagine being the athletic director to hire those two coaches that have won all those championships. So I connected with Jim Calhoun. He had retired, and then, you know, he came out of retirement at UConn and coached at the University of St. Joseph's. Then he was back in retirement. So I connected with him. I wanted him to be the first story just because his legacy is phenomenal. What he's done is amazing. And the thing that was great about Jim Calhoun is he's a fiery guy, but there was something that happened in his early childhood that basically sets the stage for the rest of his life. He's always felt like the underdog, the guy that had to work harder than anyone else to be successful and achieve. And so when I interviewed him, you know, one of the things that he talks about that really shaped his life was that his father died at a very young age. Mm. He was out playing baseball in a field and someone said, "Hey, Jimmy, you got to go home." He went home and he found out that his father had passed away and he was very young at the time, around 14, 15 years old or so. So just imagine your father dying at that age, and now you have to be the man of the household at that young age. He had a younger brother and he had older sisters. And so that story shaped the rest of his life, how he had to basically grow up and become a man. He had to help support the family at a very young age. And so his whole life was really shaped through that experience. You know, a lot of times when something bad like that happens, we say, well, why me? Why me? And the way the world works is, why not you? You know, and so unfortunately, that was a test that basically shaped the rest of his life. And I think without that happening, I don't think we see the fiery coach who became the successful guy who won the championships, brought the first basketball championship to the men's team. He won three there, including an NIT championship. They won actually four championships. And so his story is amazing. He's still around. He's still out there. I believe there's going to be a book coming out about him. I didn't publish it, but it should be a great book coming out soon.
That is awesome, man. Thanks for sharing that. Let me ask you this, because obviously, and maybe not to the depth of what you said about Jim Calhoun, but people know Jim Calhoun because he won those championships. They didn't know that story or the things that probably that happened in his life that possibly drove him to be the person that he is today. However, there's always these other stories that most people don't know about, right? Of the kid in middle school who loves basketball, who may never ever go to college and play basketball or go to the WNBA, but they have a story as well. So tell me, give me a story of somebody that's unknown that you ran into that you kind of wrote about in the Connecticut Hoops magazine.
So I wouldn't say this person is unknown. But if you look at the WNBA, talk about the WNBA, you're talking about A.J. Wilson, which I saw play last night against the Connecticut Sun, the MVP of the league last year. Caitlin Clark, who's come and taken the league by storm and put the league on her shoulders and introduced the league to a whole group of people that probably wouldn't have been interested in basketball. But I did interview Veronica Burton. Now, she is originally from Newton, Massachusetts. Mm. She went to Northwestern. She was a great basketball player, three-time defensive player of the year. She got drafted a number of years ago. Coming out of college, played for the Dallas Wings. But last year, probably about a little bit around, I think around April or so, she found herself out of the league after a couple of years. Mm. So she was back. She went back to Newton, Massachusetts, worked out, was feeling really bad for herself and her family. Gave a lot of loving to her and said, you know, hey, you can mope for a little while, but now it's time to get back up. Worked on her game. And then actually the Connecticut Sun called her last year. I think it was around April or so. And she ended up making the team. And last year she had a really great year. And she was someone that was out of the league. She could have pouted the rest of her life and said, why me? Why me? But she picked herself up by the bootstraps. And then after the season was over last year, she went over to Australia and won a championship, and now she's a starting guard for the Golden State Valkyries, the new franchise in San Francisco. So that's just an amazing story, great person, and we're all going to have bad times in our lives, just how we choose to deal with those bad times.
Buddy is flat out, and the point too, she's not as well known as A'ja Wilson or Clayton Clark, but more importantly, as you stated earlier, everybody has a story, right? And those stories are what, you know, her story and Jim Calhoun's and millions of others is what everyday Americans deal with all the time, right? Adversity and the difference between the winners and the losers, at least in my opinion, is the people that fight through that adversity. And that story epitomizes that. Let me ask you this, buddy. Why should people read and buy the Connecticut Hoops magazine?
So it's the only basketball magazine. But what I tell people, you don't have to be in Connecticut to buy the magazine. The magazine, one of the things that we do that's very unique, each cover story, we do a long format journalism. What long format journalism is, it's a long story. So a lot of people want to read a short, quick 1,000 word, 1,500 or a 500 word story. That's great, but you can't get into depth. So with our stories, we really go into the depth in depth. So when we talk about Jim Calhoun, we talk about early, you know, 14 years old, 15 years old, 30 years old, 40 years old. But it's a story. It's interesting. It's like opening a book. You know, there's lots of twists and turns.
Right.
It's interesting. So a lot of the media, what's happening with the media thinks that we don't want to read anything. We just want everything dumbed
instant,
down.
Instant microwave treatment.
Yes.
Stuff, right?
Yeah. So I'm able to, each cover story is long format journalism. We'll do like a 7,000 word story, but then also too, there are shorter stories in there. So you don't have to read all these long stories. There's 2,000 word stories. And then we add other content. Like we'll do a Q&A where it's just a half a page or something like that. So we try to mix in some really long in-depth stories with shorter things. And then we also add, you know, poetry, something interesting. We'll add something about art and culture. So the magazine takes you on a journey. And what we want to do is get people off their devices, get people off their screens for a little bit.
I love that.
Get away from all those distractions. Sit down and relax. Because right now we're in a world where We're constantly bombarded with information and distractions, and focus is something that has fallen to the wayside. Some people can't even focus for a few minutes without even looking at their phone.
That's so true, buddy. What's your long-term vision goal for the magazine?
So the magazine, we want to, you know, keep putting out the best issues that we possibly can. Great stories. There's so many different stories. One of the other issues we wrote about Riley Fox, who's now just finished his freshman year at Yale. He's one of the most prolific scorers in Connecticut basketball history, scored over, I believe, 2,100 points in high school. We interviewed him as he was graduating from high school, at Conard High School, and did his story. And then he went to Yale, had a great year, and I know he's going to have a great career there. But the long-term goal is to continue producing the best quality publication that we can. Not just Connecticut. If you're out in California, you want to read great basketball stories, especially the way the portal is. You know, a guy that's here in Connecticut playing basketball could be playing for USC. That's and so actually, true. That actually happened. Matt Nolan, who played for Yale, a Connecticut kid, he ended up this past year playing for USC.
Wow.
So the stories, if you just love basketball and great stories, inspiring stories, that's the other thing. Everything I write, I write in a way that's inspiring to people. So the magazine's for anyone. So if you're listening to this in California or Idaho or Alaska, pick up the magazine. It's top-notch story telling. So my long-term goal is to build a media company with heart that tells inspiring stories about people that goes beyond just sort of the quick headlines and really gets into people learning about who they are and what they want to accomplish in life, inspires them, gives them something to look forward into life. And, you know, at this point in time, I'm looking at, you know, developing a live sports show around basketball. So that's in the works. So really just build a media company that is redefining what we can talk about in terms of sports, at least initially in basketball.
Wow, buddy. I love it. I love it. And, you know, that that's a good segue to, your book, the other book that you wrote, you know, Get the Loot and Run, okay, in terms of showing, entrepreneurs how to invest in their business. Now, you want to create a media company, and you're on your way with the Connecticut Hoops magazine, but what inspired you, you know, and I know you have an economic background prior, you know, to getting into the publishing game, but what inspired you to write this book for, you know, entrepreneurs who, you know, want to turn, you know, water into wine?
Yeah, so you touch on a good point. So my background is economic development. So I worked here in Connecticut with various large cities, helping them recruit businesses, retain businesses, marketing cities. When I was working in Connecticut, actually working in the Waterbury area, we had a revolving loan fund. I learned the whole game of lending money to businesses from the ground up. I had to learn everything. I didn't go to a fancy business school to learn about underwriting loans. And what we were able to do there in Waterbury, we were able to lend money to businesses that wouldn't get traditional financing from a bank. So let me just tell you this to anyone out there looking to get a loan from a bank. Banks are not in business to lose money. I mean, contrary to what you hear, they're not in business. They have depositors' money, who depositors want that money.
Correct.
And they're not.
And they want to make money off that money.
Exactly. So don't go to a bank and say, please take a chance on me, because they're not. Unless you have a ton of collateral, mortgage on a second mortgage on your house, or maybe you own your house free and clear, then maybe they make it take a chance because there actually is no risk involved in that.
They'll take the house.
Exactly. Right. So I learned just in terms of learning underwriting, how to underwrite a deal, how to source a deal, how to get a deal approved. At the time I was working for a nonprofit economic development agency. So I learned underwriting from the ground up, presenting it to a loan committee, getting it approved. And then once it got approved, working with our attorneys to get the documents closed, and then closing the deal. Then after the deal was closed, you know, working on servicing the loan, making sure the business owner didn't have any problems or challenges. If there was challenges or there was issues making payments, you know, sometimes we'd have to restructure it. But our whole thing was that we were looking at helping businesses thrive in the communities that we served, generally were urban areas.
So let me ask you this though, buddy. You know, one of the things is it's a struggle. You have an idea, you want to start a business, you start investing your own money in it, right? But then you get to a point where you're like, for me to scale this, I'm going to need more money. and you just got finished talking about it. You know, you think of going to the bank, but, you know, people may not have a high credit score, or they may not have enough, you know, capital or, you know, anything collateral, I should say, in terms of, you know, being able to back the loan. All right. And then they try to max out their credit cards, right? You know, in your book, you talked about, you know, basically looking at, you use the word capital, even though you write and you said, get the loot and run. But you talk about capital as being food, as being nourishment, right? And then there's, you know, the fast food, right, which is not good for you. And then there's more of the quality foods. Talk a little bit about that to educate people in terms of when they're out looking for funding. You just spoke a little bit about banks, but what's some of the other things that they should stay away from or look to? And then what's a myth that people that's been pushed out about getting capital or getting funding that you want to definitely dive into?
Well, so we talked about that myth that banks are not in business to lose money. So just remember that any entity that lends you money, they're in business to get a return on their money. So if you're going to them saying, hey, take a chance on me, no, this is about business. The numbers have to make sense. But to go back to your earlier question, you asked, why did I write the book? I felt this is a white space in the market. There wasn't a book that was comprehensive about sourcing capital. There was always books about the Small Business Administration. And by the way, another myth is that the Small Business Administration is not a direct lender. Small Business Administration is a program that banks and financial institutions participate in. Mm-hmm. So the SBA doesn't do direct lending unless there's some kind of emergency or disaster. That's when they'll do direct lending, but it's all through their participating partners. So the partners have their own criteria for a loan. So if they don't want to do the deal, they don't have to do the deal. SBA backing is basically just a credit enhancement. So a bank may look at underwriting a deal and they say, okay, under our normal criteria, we're not going to do this deal because we're in the business of making money. You don't meet that criteria. However, you know, this deal could work if we use the SBA enhancement program. So the SBA has some enhancement programs that help reduce risk to a bank. So that's sort of just two myths right there in terms of SBA is not a direct lender. And then again, banks are not in the business to lose money. And then when you look at the different products out there, there's so many different things out there. So these days, even if you do have bad credit, someone will lend money to you. But what they're going to do is they're going to charge you a very high interest rate. Right. So when you look at funding businesses, credit cards generally are always the most expensive way to finance a business, especially most credit cards are variable interest rates. So when the economy is doing poorly, interest rates generally will go down to spur economic activity. But when the economy is doing really, really well, the Federal Reserve will raise interest rates. So if you have a variable interest rate credit card, the rates can go up. And most credit cards right now are usually 30% interest anyway. So basically you're on terms with basically what a loan shark would charge you. So you just got to be careful. I know some people, you do have to use credit cards for certain things, but using a credit card to finance your business is very risky. It can be very dangerous and it could be really detrimental to your business, as well as to your long-term credit standing. So that's why I wrote the book. I wrote the book to give people a number of options. And I always make sort of that, you know, metaphor, like, you know, capital is like going into a buffet. There's all kinds of foods at a buffet, all kinds of aromas coming at you. And if you're not careful, you may eat too much or you may eat the wrong things. You may eat a whole bunch of French fries, which will give you some calories and so on, but it's not going to give you the nutrition that you need. It can be deadly to your health with higher cholesterol and those kind of things. So look at the financial products that are going to be good for your health. So I always work with community-based lenders, nonprofit lenders, where what we're looking at doing is we're looking at finding businesses that are worthy of receiving financing. Maybe they had some issues with their credit and now they've cleaned them up. Maybe someone had a death in the family and they had to use that money to pay for a funeral and they fell behind on payments or someone got sick. Most of these community-based lenders are willing to take a chance on you if you present something to them that makes sense, dollars, cents, that's wise for them. And you have some kind of plan of how you're going to generate revenue, how you're going to pay back. So that's really why I wrote the book, to give people options, to let them know that they have options out there. And regardless of what your credit score is, that, you know, there's going to be products out there, but they're going to be much more expensive than if you have a great credit score.
Wow. What is, you know, after reading the book, to be honest with you, I loved it. All right. And I definitely recommend it. Not just because you're on the show, but you had sent it to me a few weeks back and I read it and I was like, wow, this makes so much sense. And it's not information as readily available to the everyday person. So based on that, what is a aha moment that somebody, after they read it, they came up to you and said, man, this thing right here changed me. Did you get any feedback like that at all?
Oh yeah, all the time. I mean, I've worked with so many businesses over the years. When I mentioned that I've helped businesses source over $1 billion back during the, that's working with all the different economic development entities, all the businesses I've funded over the years. But that number dramatically increased during the pandemic. So during the pandemic, 2020, I worked for the Small Business Administration here in Connecticut for a year.
Got it.
So I did that for a year. Sort of like, I felt like I was going into the military.
Because in what way?
Yeah, because you have to, when you work for the government, this is sort of crazy, but just the way the government works, you have to basically raise your right hand and say you swear to do X, Y, Z.
I did.
You know what I'm saying? Like if you're going to the military.
I didn't know they did that. At the SBLA, but wow.
Yeah, they're a government entity. So you're raising your right hand to sort of basically, I don't remember the exact terminology, but basically you're being enlisted sort of to work for the government. And so just working during that time, you know, I helped, I worked for the SBA office for a year, but as soon as I got there, after 2 months, I volunteered to work with our disasters programs because that was during the time where most businesses were having challenges. Some of them were going out of business. So for 2 months, I processed thousands of loans, thousands of economic injury disaster loans. They call it EIDL. I processed a whole bunch of those loans all over the country. So that boosted my numbers up to well into the billions of dollars in terms of the applications that I processed. So I did that for 2 months and then went back to my duty station, which was in Connecticut. And all during that time, I worked out of my home, which was great. I didn't have to go into any office because that was during the time of the pandemic.
Got it. And then any nugget, did anybody come up after reading the book saying, hey man, this point right here was spot on?
So one of the things that I tell people is, do not have a capital problem. You have a business model problem. Everyone thinks, oh, I need money. Well, what is your business model? If you buy a boat today and it has a hole in it, you take it out into a river, ocean, a pond, it's going to sink. And so a lot of people have business models that are faulty. They have a hole in it. No matter how much money you put into that business, it's going to sink. So you need to fix your business model. How do you acquire customers? What is the value that you deliver to customers? And how do you collect that money? At the end of the day, I don't care how many sales you have. If you're not collecting that money in a timely manner, your boat is going to sink. So remember that you don't have a capital problem. You have a business model problem. Once you fix your business model, then your business will be attractive to various types of capital.
That's an excellent point. And so at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's not about they won't give me the money. They're not going to give you the money because you haven't shown that you can make money. All right. So excellent point. Let's shift to this, my friend. You know, obviously, there's a lot of people, you know, African-American people, blacks that are trying to start a business. Right. And one of the struggles is financial literacy. So how can, you know, we can increase financial literacy around the black community?
So let me just show you this. We have the greatest device ever created.
I love it.
We have supercomputers in our pockets. There is no excuse for someone to say they don't have access to information. Those same people are on Instagram all day. They're on Facebook all day. So to tell me that you don't have access to information, that's a bold-faced lie. We all have access to information. It comes down to how much time are you willing to put into developing yourself, developing your business? And that's what we all need to do. And I think sometimes specifically, let's just say men tend to be more arrogant. Oh, I know it all.
Or they don't want to show that they don't know.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. I found, and this is sort of a generalization, not all men, but women tend to be more willing to say, okay, I don't know this. Help me. How do we do this? And men, we're supposed to be the providers, the hunters, the gatherers, and we have this hard shell. And sometimes there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I don't understand this. Help me understand this. And so there's so much information out there. And that's another reason why I wrote the book. I wanted people to have the information at their fingertips. And my big thing is there's a lot of free information out there, but sometimes you have to pay for something. If you're willing to build your business and you want it to be successful, hundreds of thousands of dollars in revenues or millions of dollars in revenue, Spending $30 on a book is nothing. Right, so invest in ourselves, whatever it may be, invest in yourself so you can be successful.
And that's a broke mindset though too, right? And you know, I want to ask you this question because you broke it down in your book. You said the difference between an entrepreneur and a small business owner, right? Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I love, first you said there are 29 million small businesses in the United States, right? And I love how you broke down how they affect the economy. But more importantly, what's the difference between an entrepreneur and a small business owner?
Yeah. And that $29 million number of businesses fluctuates.
You know, of course.
That was a little while ago.
But that's still, nobody would know that, to be fair, is that many small businesses. But difference between an entrepreneur and a small business owner.
So entrepreneurs take risks. They take huge risks. They go into the market and solve problems that need to be solved. So we'll give you an example. We'll just say Starbucks. Howard Schultz didn't start Starbucks by himself. It was actually an existing company that he took, but he had the mindset to build it and grow it. So Howard Schultz was never going to be happy with one coffee shop. A small business owner will be happy with one coffee shop, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that, right? Yeah. Nothing wrong with it.
But Howard Schultz wanted to scale this and make basically Starbucks America's coffee place and actually the world's coffee place. So to scale a business, as an entrepreneur, you're willing to take big risk. You want to grow and be global and be, you know, big businesses, where the typical small business owner, let's say, for example, you had a corporate career, you're done with your corporate career, you're 50 years old or whatever it is, and you're like, okay, I still want to keep going on. They may decide, oh, this pizza place down the corner is for sale. I'm going to buy that. And so there's not as much risk because it's an existing business has been around for a while. There's customers, there's revenue streams and so forth. So you buy that business and you're operating. You're happy with the way it is. You don't want to scale. You don't want to get bigger. That's a certain mindset, a small business owner. And there's nothing wrong with that. Some people have their businesses and it's sort of a side gig. They're making candles or they're doing something else like that. They're happy with that. It brings in a little extra income for them. That's a small business. But entrepreneurs generally want to solve big problems. They want to scale. They want to grow. Howard Schultz is a perfect example. The story of McDonald's is also a fascinating story. Ray Kroc. If you ever watch The Founder, it's on all the different platforms. That's a fascinating story. Ray Kroc did not create McDonald's. He had the vision that grew into McDonald's, but the McDonald's brothers
created McDonald's.
Yeah. Right. And so think about it. He could have been happy with just one store, but he saw the vision. And actually, it's sort of a crazy story because the founder, Ray Kroc, took McDonald's away from them. And if you look at McDonald's business model is brilliant. What they do is they own the real estate under all those different franchises. So they're really a real estate game. They make more money on real estate than serving burgers. And so that really comes down to the business model.
That's insane.
Seriously, that's what it is. I mean, if you buy into a franchise, you do not own a franchise. The franchisee, the franchisor is the owns the business. So you know what I mean? So you go to the business.
You just get the success formula.
Yes.
You're buying the success formula, right?
Yeah. So you know, you don't own the business. So you go there, you're basically licensing their business out. And if you don't operate it under the terms and conditions that they want you to operate, they can take that away from you at any point in time. So that's another business model. That's right. There's lots of franchises in the country, all kinds of food businesses, that's just another business that you can get into. So to make a long story short, entrepreneurs take big, bold chances and they can lose their shirt, lose their pants. A small business owner, you're going to lose some stuff possibly, but if you're buying an existing business or you're starting small and staying small, there isn't certainly the risk and reward as there is terms of an entrepreneur.
Yeah, absolutely. And you write in the book that both are needed, right? So there's not a negative. The challenge is that, you know, the word entrepreneur is used loosely, right? That every person who has a small business is an entrepreneur, and that's not true, right? And so I love how you broke down the difference between the two. But again, if you have a small business and you're a small business owner, there's nothing wrong. That's awesome, right?
Yep,
because
absolutely.
You're controlling your own destiny. You get up, you don't have to work for anybody, you're working for yourself. So there's nothing wrong, but there's just a big differentiation when it comes to an entrepreneur. Let me ask you this. In your experience, you know, working SBLA, doing all the things you want to do. When we talk about entrepreneurs, is it a tougher hill to climb when we're talking about Black entrepreneurs or anybody of color?
Absolutely. If you look at the history of this country, how we were founded, I mean, if you look into history, I don't want to get into all the details. We know the way the country was founded. We know that we've had enslaved people. We know that there's certain groups of people, specifically Black people, who built this country. The government has done so many things to basically hold us down. Jim Crow laws, enslavement, all these other rules and all this discrimination. So there absolutely is, but we have to choose to rise up. We know that exists. We have to choose to rise up and be successful. And so Black businesses face a number of challenges. One of the things is access to is capital. A lot of times, you know, back in the day we had redlining, so we couldn't live in certain neighborhoods. And redlining, if you own a home, that's basically your primary source of wealth.
There's no question.
And if you're in a really good neighborhood and you have some equity in that home, you can borrow against that. If you don't own any home, so boom, now you don't have any asset to lend against. And most white people, the government created all these different programs to help them, and white people did not have to go through redlining.
Correct.
And so they didn't have a chance to generate the Black people didn't have the chance to generate
because
the
their houses were less money when they were in redlining. When they in their neighborhoods, the house is not worth as much as it would be in the white neighborhood.
But specifically, what the government said is we're not
investing in these
areas. Yeah, they drew red lines around. Correct. That's why they call it redline. They drew red lines and said these areas are risky. We're not going to invest in those.
So those homes in those areas don't cost as much. I mean, it's not as valuable as much versus the other areas. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was just an arbitrary thing.
Right.
You know, oh, these are Black neighborhoods. They can't be worth as much as other neighborhoods. So basically, to get back to your question, yeah, so capital. We don't have capital. We don't have equity that we can put up. That's a big thing. The other thing is network. We generally don't have the network that other people have. So if your son or daughter went to a so-called elite school, the people that they're rubbing shoulders with, their parents are running major corporations. They're involved in major things. So they have access to capital. They have access to people that can put you into rooms who can fund your businesses. So if you look at capital, you look at our network, those are two things that significantly impact our businesses to be able to move forward. And without those, you're basically starting from ground zero. It's a challenge.
Right. But to your point earlier, you know the game. When you get, you play basketball, right?
I did, yeah.
So at the end of the day, this team may be better, mm-hmm. right? You may have people on the bench. Your starting point guard or center may be hurt, right? So you know the game is stacked against you, right? And I think that's the biggest thing to be aware of. Know the game is stacked against you. So you got to figure out how to navigate through that to still become successful. And we've had, you know, you've written articles about people who've overcome those things. But net, let's just be clear here. There is an unbalanced playing field when it comes to, you know, Black entrepreneurs and everybody else, or people of color and everybody else. Would you agree?
There is. And if you look at this other simple thing, people like to do business with
people that they know.
They know.
Like.
And then a lot of times that look like them.
Correct.
If you look at certain communities, we just look at any community, they tend to do business with themselves. We have another negative. Black community, we tend not to do business with people that look like us. We've been socialized to believe that a Black product is inferior to a white product.
Mm.
And that's something that's been internalized in a lot of people's minds. So we need to basically unlearn that. You can be any color skin, any religion, anything. You can build the best product there is. So we need to, if someone has a great product, whoever they are, we want to do business with people that have a great product, and that can be anyone, including Black Americans.
Let me ask you a question though on that. Would that, you know, you talked about the difference between an entrepreneur and a small business owner. Wouldn't some of that fall into the small business owner where I'm just going to sell to my community and that's basically it?
No, not really. Because if you look at Black Enterprise, when you look at, I'm looking at the sign over there, Black Enterprise.
No, you can leave it. Yeah, go ahead.
But if you look at BET revolutionized TV because it served a market that was out there of Black consumers. And he built that into a very successful business. I know that the owner, husband and wife eventually split, but they built that company from the ground up to a huge $1 billion payday.
But at the end of the day, they didn't just work with Black people, right? They had to work with, because didn't Paramount end up buying it and stuff of that nature as well?
Yeah, I mean,
right? And then they also had to have sponsorship and advertising. And there wasn't a lot of, I mean, I wouldn't say it was a lot, but they didn't get a lot of black advertising dollars. They got it from mainstream. So to your point, they still had to stretch out outside of their community to scale and make money off the business.
Yeah. So you can start off with a small business idea that eventually you can scale and be more entrepreneurial. So you can switch boxes. No one says you have to stay in one particular box scaling. That was just an example of a business that started small, scaled. And if you look at blacks as a market or Spanish people as a market or Asian people as a market, that product, if you look at what BET was providing, basically it was saying, if you want to reach this community, this is a program that can reach that community.
Correct.
So America, that's the thing about America. We only understand, especially corporate America, they only understand dollars.
That's it. Bottom line.
So if you want to reach the black community, that was a program that reached the black community, and it was a good buy because you could reach millions of people by putting advertisements on that particular program. So I'm not saying just serve the black community. Build the best product that there possibly is out there, and people will come.
No, and so I definitely heard that. Yeah, I'm agreeing with you on that. Advice. Somebody's watching, listening to this. They're scared. Especially now after they heard you. No, I'm teasing. And they're like, you know, I have a big idea or I want to start a business, but I'm used to working and getting a paycheck every day and having that security, even though I'm miserable being here. I don't see no advancement for me. What would you say to them?
First thing is don't run away from anything. Run towards something. So if you're running away from your boss because you don't want a boss, you're not going to be successful. If you're running towards something, you see a market opportunity that you want to create, that there's a void, there's a white space, that's totally different than running away from someone. And a lot of business owners, what they do is, let's say you're working for your boss and do whatever your job is. After a while, you may get tired of your boss. So you're running away from having a boss. And then so you start a business that basically is doing what you did before. But what happens is you're good at the craft, but you're not good at building the system that builds the business. That's what happens to a lot of black business owners. We're good at doing the craft, but we're not good at building the business that builds the system that's going to be around for a long time, that will have an asset that we can sell. So never run away from something, run towards something because you see an opportunity in the marketplace to do something that is not being done or do it better than someone else. A perfect example, if you look at, you know, everyone back in the day had Blackberries. Blackberry was the thing. You're awesome. You know, that keyboard that you can press, you know what I'm saying? But this guy named Steve Jobs said, I see this. I see where the future is coming. Basically what they did was they put all this technology into a phone and got rid of created a glass screen and got rid of the buttons. Blackberry didn't see that. So Steve took the whole smartphone to a whole nother universe. So there's opportunities to basically unseat the incumbents if you have a product service that's going to serve the market better.
Or you have vision, right? Because that's really the key here. Sure. Somebody else could have saw this. No need for me to build a smartphone. They're already here, right? Mm-hmm. Steve Jobs had vision in terms of Howard Lux had vision when he looked at Starbucks versus just having a coffee shop. Mm-hmm. He saw that could be somewhere else. So that's awesome. Let me ask you this, buddy. Because you talked a minute ago about you can build a product, but you don't know how to build the systems to be able to scale. What lessons have you learned, good or bad, from corporate America?
If you like what you hear and want to join us on this journey of making uncomfortable conversations comfortable, please subscribe to a Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hit subscribe now to stay connected for more episodes that challenge, inspire, and lead the change.
Great question. I think that's the thing that's most important is you need to work for someone, understand how the system works. I mean, business and life is a game. You have to treat it that way. And so the great thing that you can is you need to understand how corporate America works, how they do things. A perfect example, one of the things that corporate America will always do, especially as a small business that hurts you, they're going to take a long time to pay you. Why? Because they can.
Well, they're the bank. They're exactly. holding their money 90, exactly. 120 days exactly. before they pay you.
Right? Exactly. So it's a game. You got to learn the game of business. And the only way you learn that is by working for someone else, learning how you put systems in place, learning how people interact with the customers, learning how things get done. And so that should be where you start. Very few people just start a business without any kind of experience. So working for someone else, understanding where the market is going, Corporate America can teach you that. And actually, it's sort of like having a paid internship. They're going to pay you to learn how business works, pay you to make connections, pay you to meet people. Why not do that?
That's excellent. Another thing that's very important is brand building. Okay. Talk a little bit about how you built your brand. How did you network? And more importantly, how did you protect your reputation?
My brand is not where I want it to be. My whole goal is to continuously building the brand. So when I mentioned CT Magazine, everyone knows what that is.
No. I'm saying your personal brand.
Oh, personal brand.
Anthony Price's brand.
Okay. It just starts with just being the best that you possibly can. I mean, that's something that we all can do. If you're sweeping the floor, be the best floor sweeper. If you're in Wall Street, be the best banker on Wall Street, whatever it is. If you're the best parent, be the best parent that you possibly can be. No one has a patent on that. So there's no excuse. Be the best person that you possibly can be. I'm not saying you don't have flaws or you make mistakes, but just be the best person that you possibly can be. That's something that I always try to do, constantly striving for it. I haven't reached perfection, and I'm constantly doing that. And the other thing that you can do is, as I mentioned, there's so much information out there. Find your lane and continuously improve to get better. There's no excuse that's stopping you from not being the best person in whatever industry that you're in.
Got it. Let me throw something else at you regarding that. Let me paint a picture here. And we've both seen these pictures before in our careers. I'm being the best that I'm saying from a corporate standpoint, I'm being the best. I'm working hard. I'm doing well. I know my job inside and out. I am the best, but I'm not moving ahead. Right. So why am I not moving ahead when I'm listening to Anthony Price and he's saying, be the best that you can be? And I am. And my boss hasn't promoted me. Seems like nobody knows me. How would you solve that? What recommendations would you give to solve that problem?
So going back to it, it's a game. Got to play that game. At some point, if you're not attached to the right person in the organization, or if they don't want to give you the opportunity, you got to start looking at your exit strategy.
And you got to network though too, right? You got to start going out and building that brand by meeting other people and not just staying in that one area under the thumb of somebody. Would you agree with that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. You're building your brand. You know, we talked about when you're in an organization, you're constantly meeting people, you're constantly evolving. So networking is an important part of your business. You can't spend every day, all day networking because you got to get the work done. But that's something really important. No one is telling you have to stay at a company. Now, obviously, you have bills and so forth. You got to make sure you take care of that. And you also have to have a good support network, your wifey, your girlfriend, whatever it is. They have to be on board 100% because you need to be able to pay your bills and be able to work it. And maybe your wife or significant other may support you for a while. But at a certain point, you got to be able to move forward. So what I'm simply saying is if you're not getting the raises, the promotions that you feel like you're worthy of, you have to work on some networking. At some point in time, you have to exit that organization and you may have to take another job somewhere else, work there for a few years and then work at another organization and eventually you'll move up. Because basically, if you're really good at what you do, eventually the people are going to have no choice but to give you the what you're entitled to. So no one's telling you have to stay at a company. If you feel like you have to stay at a company, that's personally on you.
That's awesome, buddy. Let me ask you this. So I've listened, I watch, I'm fired up. Okay. I believe I have an idea. I want to start my own business. You write in your book that entrepreneurship is 90% mindset. What do you mean by that?
We tell ourselves these stories. Sometimes these stories are limiting. So if you're telling yourself a story that is limiting, you're never going to be able to. You say, a perfect example, if you go to the gym and you said, no, I'll never be able to lift more than 50 pounds. You never will. So you'll never do it. So I think you have to feed your, just like you're feeding your body good food, you have to feed your mind empowering things. You have to push yourself. You have to believe in yourself and you have to stretch your mind. If, let's say, for example, if you never exercised before, okay, you start by walking down the block. Okay, boom. Do that for a few times. Then you stretch it out further. So it's your mind can be stretched as far as you're willing to stretch it. If you want to limit yourself and say society is not going to let me do things, then you're going to put yourself in a box and you're never going to be able to really reach your full potential. And that's the other thing. The world needs what you have. You have to do everything you can to develop it because we've been given gifts and our responsibility is to share that gift with the world.
I love it, buddy. I love it. But let me take it to the next level, though, because there's a next level. All right. The world deserves what I have. I'm excited about it. I know I can make it. I'm working it every day. I'm doing everything I need to do. But I don't see the results right away. I'm starting to doubt, did I make the right decision? I'm pretty sure you've been in those situations as well, right? Where you're doing everything that you're supposed to do. You believe in your business, and for whatever reason, it's in a lull. It's not growing. So how do you deal with those when doubt comes up? Because it will come up. Let's just be fair. How do you deal with that?
Oh, it's going to come up, and doubt may come from your significant other saying, hey, what's up? We got to pay the bills. It may come from a relative or whatever. That's reality. I mean, look at what CT Hoops magazine. Every day, people don't pat me on the back. I mean, I don't get a pat on it.
So it's not like being at work. Hey, Anthony, how you doing, man?
You got to be built for it. You got to be built for knowing that you're not going to get that applause every day. And you have to build something for the long run. You know, we're in a society where you want instant gratification today. Some things are built for next week, next month, 10 years, or decades. I mean, you've had a corporate career. I've had a corporate career. Nothing happens overnight.
It just doesn't.
It doesn't. You have to prepare yourself. And you have to celebrate the little victories that you have. So if I get a sale today or a few sales today, I'm patting myself on the back and saying, okay, tomorrow in the next couple of days, I may not get some sales, but I'll remember the sales that I got today.
Ah, see, I love that. The reference points, right? Because having reference points, you can always go back and say, you know what? I remember when I was struggling a little bit, but then I got this. This came through, blah, blah, blah. So it's just a matter of time. If I stick with it, that happiness or those results will come back again. So I love that. All right, buddy. So I'm going to put you on the rapid fire right now, right? I'm going to ask you a series of three questions. I want you right off the top of your head. I want you to tell me and the audience what time it is. Okay. So this is your final. This is where we're going to have Anthony Price's final wisdom. Okay. What's the best advice you ever received?
Be the best you possibly can.
I love it. Finish this sentence. If you want to build something great, you better
work for it.
All right. And let me hear this. Give us some final words to aspiring entrepreneurs and creators, especially young Black professionals. What do you want to leave with them, my brother?
Really, you got to be the best that you possibly can. Understand that you have to persevere over the long run and do not try to do it yourself. Get as much support as you possibly can, whether that's your family, friends, and so on, because it can be lonely out there. Whatever you're doing, there's so many naysayers out there. The world is a world of status quo, and no one wants you to do something that they haven't done before. And I heard this before. Someone says that they said that basically sometimes family and friends, they'll support you, but they don't want you to succeed because sometimes they don't want you to be more successful than them.
That is true.
And that's a lonely road. They're not going to be against you, but they may not be clapping as loudly as they can until you actually achieve it. Because sometimes they're disappointed in their lives and what they've been able to. So you got to be able to persevere, put the work in the best that you possibly can.
Buddy, thank you for that. How can a Black executive perspective help you, my friend?
At the end of the day, likes are great. You know, oh, I went on Instagram, I saw it, I like this. But at the end of the day, to be a successful business, you have to get sales. So I published a number of different books. Get the Loot and Run is the best book in terms of sourcing capital. We have the full-size book that's available on theminibooks.com, as well as we have the mini book versions, which are basically iPhones for their books for the iPhone generation. You can read them within 30 minutes, get the information to run. That's the other thing too about an entrepreneur. Entrepreneurs don't want books. They want what's going to solve their problem right away. So theminibooks.com, buy one of my books, subscribe to my magazine, CT Hoops, which is also available on the mini books. And that's the only way we're going to grow. If we can build more successful Black businesses, we're going to have economic clout. And as I mentioned before, the only thing America understands is money. So the stronger you build your business, the more economic clout you're going to have, the more clout you're going to have with government officials, local officials, and then we'll be able to change the way the way things work in this country.
Awesome. What's the website again, my brother?
TheMiniBooks.com.
MiniBooks.com. Check it out. He's got stuff on Stephen A. Smith, Kobe Bryant. Again, get the loot and run. A ton of stuff. Actually, we have a picture up right now of some of his mini books. Definitely check it out. And also check out Connecticut Magazine, Hoops Magazine, which has fantastic stories, especially if you love basketball and you're all about the game and you want to learn about other individuals, definitely check it out. Anthony Price. president, founder, CEO of Connecticut Hoops Magazine. Thanks for coming on the Black Executive Perspective podcast, my brother.
Tony, thanks for having me. I love what you're doing.
Thank you, my friend. I think it's now time for
Tony's Tidbit.
Okay, so the tidbit today. You were not made for average. You were built to endure the grind, push past the setbacks, and publish your greatness into the world. And you heard a lot of that from my good friend, Anthony Price. So don't forget to check out the next Need to Know by Dr. Nasinga Burton. Dr. Burton appears on the Black Executive Perspective podcast every Thursday and lets you know about what's going on in the world, what's going on in the world that you don't have time to check out. So check her out every Thursday here on the Black Executive Perspective podcast. And you do not want to miss our next pull up, speak up, our roundtable dives into the crucial topics. What's going on in the world? It's bold, unfiltered, raw conversation that you want to be a part of. It's not just an episode, it's a revolution. So don't forget to check out Pull Up, Speak Up here on the Black Executive Perspective podcast. So now it's our time for a BEP's call to action. If this is your first time, our goal here on the Black Executive Perspective podcast is to eliminate and decrease all forms of discrimination. And what we're asking everyone to do is follow our acronym called LESS, L-E-S-S. L stands for learn. We want everyone to learn about other racial and cultural groups, their nuances, so you know more about them. And then after you learn, you have the letter E, which stands for empathy. Now, since you've learned about people that you're not familiar with, now you can understand their point of view because you can walk in their shoes. And then the first S is share. Share what you've learned to your friends and family so they can be enlightened as well. And then the final S is stop. You want to stop discrimination as it walks in your path. So if Aunt Jenny or Uncle Joe says something at the Sunday dinner table that's inappropriate, you say, Aunt Jenny, Uncle Joe, we don't believe that. We don't say that. And you stop it right there. So if everyone can incorporate less, L-E-S-S, we'll build a more fair, more understanding world, and we'll all see the change that we want to see because less will become more. So don't forget to check out the next episode on the Black Executive Perspective podcast on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And you can follow us on our socials of LinkedIn, X, YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram at a Black Exec. Again, for our fabulous guest, the one and only Anthony Price, Connecticut Hoops Magazine. I'm Tony Tidbit. We talked about it. We learned about it. We laughed about it. We're still going to strive about it, and we're going to thrive about it. We love you, and now we're out.
A Black Executive Perspective.